Good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Justice Bill Meyer.
Good morning.
Morning.
Justice Lee Gabriel. And I are your panel this morning. And if you're ready, both sides ready, I will ask the clerk to call the case and announce the lawyers.
Court called Capital One National Association versus Carter Burgess. And please support Mr. Leonard Burgess will represent the appellant and Mr. Stephen Hayes will represent the appellant.
Mr. Woods?
Morning, Judge. Judge, our position for Capital One is that the trial court abused their discretion by dismissing the underlying lawsuit without prejudice for the failure to file a certificate of merit. And our position simply is that in this particular case, no certificate of merit was needed for a couple of reasons, and we'll explain those to the court, and then I'll briefly go into the facts of the case to give you some background. We believe that no certificate of merit was needed because fraud allegations under the terms of the Act itself and in cases that have interpreted the Act are outside the scope and breadth of Chapter 150 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. So the first position is that fraud allegations are outside of the scope of the Act. The second position that we take is that the acts complained of by the defendant were not professional services. And therefore, since they were not professional services as such, they are also outside the scope of the Act. And we believe that for either of those reasons, the court would be justified in reversing the trial court. I'll go back just a little bit and give the court some background of the facts. Capital One was in the process of building a branch bank in Georgetown. And in doing so, they had entered into a ground lease with an entity called New America. And New America was the owner of the property, and Capital One was going to lease from New America. And New America, to do so, to provide this lease, was they were obligated to get stormwater from adjacent property owned to the property that Capital One was going to use. To do that, they were going to have to get 5 easements. Capital One had a relationship with an entity called Levinson, which was an engineering firm. Levinson, in turn, hired Carter Burgess, which is involved in this case. And Carter Burgess was required by their professional services agreement to prepare a land title survey, to prepare the plat, to prepare construction documents, and construction phasing services. That was the scope of their obligation. These easements were to be provided to Capital One by New America. As it turns out, 4 of these easements were pretty readily available, and those came forth pretty clearly and pretty quickly. The 5th easement became more problematic, and at some point in the process, an employee of Carter Burgess, a gentleman named Chris Wigand, received a phone call from a rep from New America advising New America that the 5th easement was filed. He then turned around and called Capital One and advised them that this 5th easement was filed. The significance of that was Capital One had the right via a contingency agreement to terminate the lease that they had entered into if they did so by a certain date. Had they known that the 5th easement was not filed, it is their position that they would have terminated that lease. Being advised that the 5th easement was in place, they did not. The true facts were that 5th easement was never filed. It was the information that New America provided to Wigand was incorrect. The information that Wigand then turned around when he called Capital One and gave them the information was incorrect. And as a result, Capital One lost a very valuable right that they would have had the information been provided to them correctly. The questions that we believe then, as it turns out, suit was filed against Carter Burgess. It was a lawsuit alleging fraud and alleging some other facts. And our position is simply that a lawsuit that is alleging fraud does not fit within the requirements of Section 150 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code because it doesn't sound in negligence. So a certificate of merit is not required. The second position.
Let me ask you a question. You said a lawsuit was filed somewhere in this briefing. I recall it saying that a similar or another lawsuit was filed against Carter Burgess and Mr. Wigand personally in Travis County.
That is true, Your Honor. The first lawsuit, Your Honor, was dismissed without prejudice for the failure to file the certificate of merit. Not knowing where the Court of Appeals would go or what would happen as a result thereof, Capital One then, out of an abundance of caution, since it was dismissed without prejudice, turned around and filed a similar lawsuit in Travis County. Travis County is the location where the case was originally filed in the first place, prior to the time that it had been transferred to Tarrant County. So the second lawsuit was filed then with a certificate of merit eventually, and filed against that entity, Carter Burgess, and against Mr. Wygand.
So what is the purpose of pursuing this if you already have another lawsuit filed in Travis County with your certificate of merit?
Until just a few days ago, Your Honor, we didn't know the status of that second lawsuit. Carter Burgess filed a motion for summary judgment in the second lawsuit in Travis County alleging res judicata. The court denied that motion for summary judgment, and the second lawsuit now is going forward. It's our plan to go forward with the second lawsuit. But until such time as the motion for summary judgment had been heard, out of an abundance of caution, we felt necessary to try to pursue this action.
So as of today, what is the purpose of going forward?
As of today, I believe that there may be limited purpose, quite frankly, Your Honor. We raised that issue, but was told that Carter Burgess decided that it was necessary to go forward. We raised that issue after the motion for summary judgment had been denied in Travis County. So,
Mr. Woods, why would it be that our opinion, if we write one in this case, would not be an advisory opinion, since you do have a lawsuit pending that has everything hitting on all fours down in Travis County?
Your Honor, that's a good question. That was one of the issues that we raised with counsel in phone conversations, that we were concerned that perhaps it might be either advisory, or that if this court, regardless of what this court ruled, if the court came back and said, for example, that the case was reversed, what would be the impact of that? It would be an order saying we now would have a case in Fort Worth, and we'd also have a case in Austin. If the court said, no, we're going to uphold the judgment, then what you've upheld is simply an order saying that it was proper to dismiss this case without prejudice,
right.
At which point then we could still pursue our action in Travis County.
If we were to reverse and remand, you would then have two cases pending, one in which you joined the employee as a defendant and one in which you did not.
That is correct, Your Honor. That would be the case, and it would be incumbent upon us to try to consolidate those cases out of judicial economy. Well, Judge, if I would have been involved from the beginning, that probably wouldn't have been my first choice. But dealing with the cards that I have right now, I think that the situation would be that you're correct as to what the situation would be, depending on what this court rules.
I have one other question to ask you. In terms of the claim for negligent misrepresentation, is that a lawsuit that sounds in negligence?
That does, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Our position, though, is that various courts of appeals, Austin, San Antonio, Corpus, have all reviewed this same statute, the same version of the statute, and said that if it does not sound in negligence, then there is no requirement for the certificate of merit. We believe that the fraud allegations, at a minimum, fit within that very ruling, and therefore no certificate of merit should have been required from the underlying court. Second position, and in fact, the Parker County case, which was issued by this court, dealt with that very issue and said that since the Act requires that an entity like Capital One in this circumstance identify at least one negligent act, that therefore to find that it would apply, that the Act applies to something outside of negligence, would render the statute and the wording, that particular wording of the statute, meaningless. Therefore, this court came back and said that no, it does have to require an allegation of negligence. Therefore, so our position simply is that the fraud allegations, as worded, are outside of the scope of the certificate of merit, and no requirement was not necessary for my client to have filed that originally. Second position, Judge, is that these acts that were complained of were not professional services. In this particular case, the information that Mr. Wygand provided to my client did not require professional expertise. It didn't require training, any particular specific training. the work that he did not fit within the definition of engineering services as called out in the occupational code.
Mr. Woods?
Yes, sir.
I'm looking at the Carter Burgess contract that's attached as Exhibit 4 to your supplement.
Yes, sir.
Appendix. And paragraph number on page 25, that is, I guess, paragraph number F4, talks about offsite easements, variances, and talks about how those will be provided at an additional service. And why would then the service of providing the easements on the adjoining property not have been covered by the professional services contract?
The obligation, Your Honor, to provide the easements was owned by New America, the owner of the property. In this particular case, Carter Burgess took it upon themselves to receive that phone call because they had a prior relationship with New America. When that conversation took place, he then voluntarily called us to give us this information. That was not within the scope. Obtaining the easements was not within the scope of the work that he was required to do.
Well, there was that clause in the contract that was with the Levinson Associates LP, and they're architects for the project, aren't they?
They are.
And if they're architects chosen by whom? They were chosen by Capital One. So they were in contract with Capital One about architectural services, and they contracted with Carter Burgess to provide professional services. And those professional services included a paragraph that dealt with off-site easements within the scope of the contract for the professional services.
That paragraph, though, Your Honor, did not deal with a requirement for them to obtain those particular easements.
Well, I can't read the copy very well of what's attached as the statement for additional services, authorization for additional services, but it appears to me that it's talking about two easements and having deep calls provided for those and providing them to be put on plan to be put in as part of the construction documents.
Yes, Your Honor. They were, the way that, and it is difficult to read, and I apologize for that, but I believe that it talks about providing easement descriptions such that they could provide the surveys that were necessary and such that they could provide the construction documents. The actual obtaining of those easements was owned by New America, and New America had the responsibility to provide access to those five easements. And that is the reason that New America made the phone call in the first place to Carter Burgess and the employee of Carter Burgess. The building did not go forth, Your Honor. Eventually, at some point, Capital One did not build the building. After the time that Capital One then attempted to terminate the contract, they were advised that we can go get the easement. And then they did provide the easement, but it was after Capital One's attempt to terminate. As a result, Capital One was sued by New America for breach of the lease, and that action resulted in a subsequent arbitration. And now there's also additional litigation, Your Honor, between Capital One and New America in a subsequent action in arbitration in San Antonio.
All related to this project?
All related to this project.
Okay.
These actions were also, our position is, of course, while not dispositive of this action, I think it's interesting that Wigand was not a professional engineer himself. Instead, he was an intern. If this was in fact a professional service and a professional service was required, then I believe that Carter Burgess certainly would not have placed an intern with this responsibility of making that phone call. It would have been a professional engineer. So it seems difficult for me to believe that you would have a circumstance where an intern is providing this professional service when he's not licensed as a licensed professional engineer. In addition, Your Honor, the last position I guess that we would take is that I can imagine circumstances where an engineer would be performing a non-engineering service on a job site and no certificate of merit would be required. I could imagine a circumstance where you would go to a job site to talk to an engineer about the work that was going to be performed. And an engineer goes in his truck to drive the truck across the lot, and as he's driving the truck across the lot, has an accident with someone. Is the statute, the 2005 version of the statute, would that require then that a plaintiff contact another engineer to obtain a certificate of merit that says under that circumstance it would be incumbent upon the engineer that he violated some standard of care? I don't think so. I think that is a too broad a reading of the statute. It would require a rewording of the statute and therefore would be impermissible. Our position is simply that in this case that the certificate of merit is not required, number one, because it's fraud. An allegation of fraud was made. And number two, because these were not professional services that were provided.
Thank you. Mr. Payton.
May it please the court. I'd like to correct the record slightly. In the Austin action, and I'm sure the court's interested in hearing my take on that, or Carter and Burgess's take on that action, a certificate of merit was not filed in that action either. As a matter of fact, the same affidavit that was filed in this action, which contended that there was no need for a certificate of merit in this action, was filed down there. Thus, whatever this court decides would act as issue preclusion with regard to that issue in the Austin case. It's involving the same parties, the same question of law, and we feel that we're not wasting the court's time this morning by having the court consider this because it would have consequences in the Austin action. As counsel began, the contention that the pleading of this case somehow or another brings it outside of the statute is simply not correct. A quick look at the pleading and this court's own jurisprudence would at least indicate to the court that that's not correct in this case. The fraud allegations simply are not, first of all, sufficient to allege fraud. They are, as pleaded. Number one, New America was responsible for obtaining the easements. Number two, New America obtained 4 out of the 5 needed easements. Both of those allegations are true. Number three, New America told Carter Burgess it had all 5. That is true. Number four, and here is the fraud allegation with regard to Carter Burgess. Wiegand, when he was told that information, didn't check independently to confirm it. Those words are more or less out of the active pleading in this case, and that because he didn't check to confirm that New America was telling the truth or not with regard to these easements before he passed that information on, that is somehow fraud on the part of Carter Burgess. That simply doesn't allege a fraud case. This court has said in the Parker County Veterinary Clinic case, which both sides have cited, that it is not only possible but sometimes important to look at the actual pleading to see what's been pleaded. A fraud claim simply isn't included in this pleading, and this court's jurisprudence requires that the court look past the basic pleading to see exactly what is being alleged. And what's being alleged here is a negligence claim, pure and simple. The fraud allegations, at least with regard to Carter Burgess, simply are not pleaded. And with regard to and as the facts have played out, I don't believe they're factually supported either, but we're not here to discuss that this morning. The second position that Capital One offers this court is that the act of Mr. Wiegand, who was not individually sued in this case, Carter Burgess was sued under a theory of respondeat superior, which I think speaks at least to some degree to the issue about whether this was an engineering act or not. But regardless, Wiegand, an engineer in training, was the individual who made answered a phone call from Capital One with regard to the easements. He worked for Carter Burgess. That's undisputed. Carter Burgess is an engineering firm. That's undisputed. The original claim in this case was against Carter Burgess, not Wiegand. That's undisputed. This is a situation that's similar to a law firm being sued because of something a legal assistant did or did not do. Law firms can be held responsible for acts of non-lawyers. Engineering firms can be held responsible for acts of non-engineers. And Mr. Wiegand was, in fact, in training to become an engineer. He wasn't a support staff. Capital One's major argument is that this issue relating to the easements wasn't the practice of engineering, and therefore it wasn't covered by the statute, by Chapter 150. In the Occupation Code, Section 1001.003, number subparagraph 12, at the end of a long list of things that clearly are specifically engineering having to do with mathematics and so forth, is found included and under the definition of engineering, quote, any other professional service necessary for the planning or completion of an engineering service. That language assumes, I think, that something other than all of the numbers 1 through 11 in that portion of Chapter 1001.003 is also included in the broad definition of engineering. Wiegand was asked to do something in connection with the planning or completion of a professional service, that is, the confirmation of whether there were easements obtained that needed to be obtained. It was more than a simple real estate deal, as is alleged in Capital One's briefing. Further, and the court pointed counsel to the exact thing that I'm going to point to the court to, the appendix number 4 to Capital One's brief, the engineering services agreement, contains not just the reference that the court pointed out, but several other references to easements as being a part of Carter Burgess's responsibility. The court pointed out one section. I'll point out a few more. In Appendix 4 of Capital One's appendix to their amended brief on page 22, one of Carter Burgess' jobs is a preliminary plat. And I'll quote, since extension of city water and wastewater infrastructure will be required as a part of the project, a preliminary plan must be prepared for city review. That's found at page 22. On page 23, paragraph D, subparagraph 4, the agreement calls for the creation of utility plans showing the layout of utilities to within 5 feet of new buildings, including domestic water, fire protection, and wastewater service. That surely includes wastewater easements up to the property line. Page 24 of that appendix also talks about the preparation of plats, which includes easements. Page 25, and this is what the court pointed out, in paragraph 4, during the course of this project, if it is determined that offsite easements, variances, or waivers will be required, we will provide these items as an additional service. Again, part of an engineering agreement. Finally, on page 26, as an added service, there was, in fact, an agreement to provide descriptions for two other easements. It's not a simple real estate deal, as Capital One argued in its brief. It is a part of an...
Yes. Just a few minutes ago, I understood that you said you conceded or agreed that obtaining these 5 easements that are in question here, or the 5th easement particularly that's in question here, that was the responsibility of New America. And none of these provisions that you just read to us or referred to made that the responsibility of Carter Burgess.
That's correct, and I agree. It was not Carter Burgess' responsibility to obtain it, but information concerning the easements, the locations of the easements, information that Carter Burgess would be a logical party to contact about those easements, are a part of the agreement. They had to be as knowledgeable about the easements, more knowledgeable about these easements, perhaps, than New America. New America was responsible for obtaining it. But the fact is that the existence of the easement, whether or not that easement existed, is what was at issue here, not where it was necessarily, but the it was a part of the engineering project to have plans that included these easements. Therefore, it was at least a part of the professional service, we contend, to understand where they were and whether they existed. And thus,
your allegations of fraud are not that they weren't obtained by Carter Burgess. It was that the information was conveyed and misrepresented, and they relied on it, and they lost a right as a result of it. That's really the only allegation, is it was misrepresented. Not even that they were negligent in how they had,
That's the allegation of fraud, but I would contend that the facts as alleged in the pleading don't even support that with regard to Carter Burgess, because Carter Burgess didn't knowingly misrepresent anything. Carter Burgess, as counsel pointed out in his argument, was told by New America that they had all five. Carter Burgess had every reason to believe that to be true. If Carter Burgess failed to confirm that before New America called Mr. Wiegand, and there is a question, frankly, before Capital One called Mr. Wiegand, and there's a question really as to why they didn't call New America, the party responsible for getting the easements in the first place, instead of calling Wiegand at Carter Burgess. But they did. They called Wiegand and not New America, and that's where we are. But the fact is that with regard to Carter Burgess was told that all of the easements were obtained. Carter Burgess passed that information on, believing it to be true. There's no evidence that Carter Burgess knew that it wasn't true before they passed it on to Capital One, before Mr. Wiegand passed it on to Capital One. So, I think the fraud allegation fails simply because there was no knowing misrepresentation. It's not even alleged in the active pleading that there was a knowing misrepresentation. The allegation is that Mr. Wiegand made that representation without checking to make sure it was true. That's not fraud. Fraud involves a knowing misrepresentation. So I guess my point about going through the engineering agreement is more to Capital One's contention that this was not an engineering function. The agreement contains issues in it that involve the easements. We feel Carter Burgess, as a professional engineering firm, was responsible to at least be familiar with these things, and they undertook that responsibility by checking with the party that had the contractual obligation to obtain them. What they didn't do was make sure. Are you sure? Go behind the representation of what New America said and go check the records themselves. They didn't do that. That may be negligence, but it's not fraud.
Doesn't that involve getting into the merits of the case rather than the issue of whether the statute needed to be complied with and a certificate of merit filed?
Well, I believe you're right, Your Honor, that does, but the allegation here is that the pleading takes this whole case out from under the statute, and therefore there needs to be at least some response with regard to that pleading to respond to that allegation. But I don't believe it's disputed that the various facts that I said, there were five easements, New America was responsible for getting them. New America got four. New America told us that they got all five. Those facts are not disputed.
Mr. Tatum, in terms of the issue preclusion matter that you raised at the start of your argument, that assumes that this court might affirm the trial court's action for there to be an issue preclusion matter.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if this court were to not affirm the trial court and reverse the demand, wouldn't this be of having a lawsuit pending in Tarrant County that is incomplete? conflate in the sense that it's not having all the same parties because Mr. Wiggins is not a party to this lawsuit.
That is how it would wind up, and then at some point there would be a motion by one of the other parties to consolidate these matters one place or the other. I'm sure. Well, he may be at this point, Your Honor, because I believe there is a statute of limitations issue with regard to Mr. Wiggins being joined as a party to this lawsuit. If
four-year statute of limitations on fraud.
Well, there's an allegation of fraud. We I guess the court would have to. Well,
okay.
Long and short of it is that issue could be. No, that's fine, Your Honor. I'm sure that issue would be worked out. There'd be some effort to consolidate the cases one place or the other, and that would.
Thank you, for answering my question.
Thank you. The court did not abuse its discretion in dismissing this case, and we think that the court should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Tater. Mr. Wood, do you have a rebuttal?
Very briefly, Your Honor. Judge, our rebuttal goes to comparing this particular act to the Medical Malpractice Act that was provided by the legislature during the exact same session in the exact same act. And if the court goes back and looks at the medical malpractice statute, it has a specific section dealing with employees and independent contractors. There is no such language in this particular act. That to me indicates that the legislature had an intent to not make this act as broad as the Medical Malpractice Act. What this court is being asked to do is to recodify vicarious liability in this act in a manner similar to what the legislature did with the Medical Malpractice Act in 2005. I don't think that would be something that the court should do. Secondly, it's clear that the legislature was aware of their ability to revise this act in the way that they chose because in 2005, let's see, the act applied to various categories of defendants. And that was modified in 2005 so that it would apply more broadly. So the legislature was aware, they broadened the act in 2005 to make it apply to a larger category of defendants. If they had wanted the act to apply to employees and independent contractors, similar to what they did in the Medical Malpractice Act, that language would have been included. The fact that it is not included would mean that this court is now being asked to recodify the act, which we believe is improper. So that's our argument, Your Honor. We feel that the court should reverse the trial court's decision. Thank you.
One last question, and that is, in your initial argument, you said that in the Travis County case there was a certificate of merit filed. He said there wasn't. There either was or wasn't.
There was, Your Honor. What the allegation was is that because of a concern over the statute of limitation, the Act provides that you don't have to file it with the initial pleading if you believe that the statute of limitations is about to run. That gives you an additional 30 days to file a certificate of merit. That certificate of merit was then filed within that 30-day period.
Mr. Wood?
Yes, Judge.
There's been a discussion about the deference that we're to give to the trial court in terms of decisions made by the trial court involving certain issues that are before us here in this case. What's your thinking about deference being given to a trial court's interpretation of the law as opposed to finding the facts?
In this particular case, I think that the trial court, for whatever reason, did not apply the law correctly in dismissing this case. Perhaps that's the reason that the trial court decided to dismiss it without prejudice, is because he recognized, the trial court may have recognized based upon the arguments or the information that was provided that would be the proper remedy to allow a second lawsuit to be filed to cure this problem, perhaps. I can't speak to that, Your Honor, other than to say in this case I do believe that the trial court's application of the certificate of merit is not consistent with the Court of Appeals' various opinions. It's not consistent with the legislative intent when you compare the Medical Malpractice Act to this particular act. To apply it in that manner would broaden the language of this act in a manner similar to what the legislature chose to do with the Medical Malpractice Act.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for good briefs and good arguments. We appreciate it. Your case is submitted.